Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at CineAst, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are The Color Purple, Ferrari, and Society of the Snow.
I'd like to start off today by talking about the new version of The Color Purple, which is quite a well-known story in a way, it's had various different forms. It was originally, of course, a novel by Alice Walker, a very interesting novel, in my opinion, that was published way back in 1982. And then 3 years after that, in 1985, Steven Spielberg made a big, splashy movie version of the novel. And then it turned into a Broadway show back in 2005. And that was then revived again in 2015. So by that schedule, I suppose maybe we'll see it again on Broadway next year. And that was a musical version. And that is what this new movie is. It is basically a movie based on the musical version that was done on stage in the earlier 2000s of The Color Purple. And it is a story, of course, of, I think as a lot of people know, of African-American experience. It focuses on a young woman named Celie, and it covers quite a number of years in her life. At the beginning of the film, she's very, very young, and then we have various stages when the story jumps ahead by several years. And by the end of the movie, she is an older, more mature, and presumably a wiser person. And, of course, we see all kinds of tribulations that she undergoes along the way, and we see friends and acquaintances and relatives of hers. We see experiences that they go through as well. Some of it inevitably deals with the horrific, it takes place, by the way, primarily in Georgia. Some of the movie necessarily deals with the horrific racial oppression, way beyond segregation, but real evil, violent, horrific stuff that took place in Georgia in earlier times, and I hope not today. And so, of course, we do see some of that along the way in the movie. And that's what gives the movie, to my mind, some of its most dramatic content. That may not sound surprising, but the movie doesn't have that many moments, for me at least, that are intensely dramatic. And they primarily focus on that sort of material that Celie and some of the others undergo over the course of the film. It also deals with a very horrifying marriage to a guy who is known only as Mr. He's so self-important that he thinks he's the only Mr. around. And he's not a very elevated character. He's not rich. He's not really powerful, but he has all this personal kind of oppression that he puts people around him through, and we develop in some ways he's sort of a likable guy, but in other ways he's a really evil guy, and it's very easy to get to hate this guy pretty early in the film, and then that becomes one of the strains that runs through it. And there's all kinds of other characters as well. And because this is a musical in the old sense of the movie musical, it has a lot of singing and dancing along the way. There's been a little bit of criticism of some of the dancing as being too modern for the time period of the movie. But hey, I'm not going to split hairs. It all looked pretty lively and energetic and colorful to me. So it's a very dark story in some respects, dealing as it does with the experiences of oppressed and repressed people in the South, in the Deep South, in the days of Jim Crow and so forth. So the movie, by the way, doesn't end until way past World War II. But it does deal with that whole era. And so it may seem a little unlikely to make a musical out of that with singing and dancing. But of course, some of the songs are sad and some of the songs are blues. There's also a very important character who I haven't mentioned yet named Shug, who is herself a singer. And she does some of the best singing in the movie, and she delights the other characters, and I think she delights the audience as well from time to time with her singing. There's also, by the way, a love affair between between Seeley and Shug. So that provides another little air of modern content, since that sort of lesbian story would not have taken place openly in movies of a much earlier time. So The Color Purple, how did I like it? I found it lively. I found it colorful. In ways, it was an improvement over the Steven Spielberg movie. The problem with that movie, and I wrote this at the time when that movie came out, it was just too polished, too slick, too kind of perfect in the Hollywood sense. I described it as filmmaking by the numbers. They were terrific numbers, but they were Spielberg being Spielberg and just giving it his perfectly polished veneer. Even though Alice Walker's novel is basically an epistolary novel with letters written by people, and it's full of all kinds of slang and jargon and colloquialisms and patois, and it does not have polished language, and there was Steven Spielberg making this into an extremely polished movie. The new movie of The Color Purple does that to some extent as well. I found it very slick and polished, and it also has a lot of moments of the kind of glow, literal visual glow that Spielberg likes to give his movies. So in those respects, I'm not altogether pleased with it, but again, it's lively, it's colorful, it has a lot of sympathy for oppressed people of color, and I think it's probably going to do pretty well in today's movie box office world. And our next movie, which is really different, which is Ferrari, which is a movie by Michael Mann, who's been around for a long, long time. He often makes movies centering on male characters. And here we have a real male character. We have Enzo Ferrari, the legendary maker of the famous Ferrari automobiles and also heavily involved in the world of auto racing. And this movie kind of goes back and forth between his activities as a racer, and by the time the movie really gets underway, by the time the story gets off the starting line, Ferrari is no longer racing personally, but he sort of manages a stable of racers, so that's one very big aspect of the movie. There's a whole lot of car racing scenes in it, and they're pretty dramatic to see. Michael Mann really knows what he's doing as a filmmaker, and he's making the racing scenes, to my mind, reasonably exciting. Exciting and suspenseful and dynamic. And then the other part of the movie, really two other parts of the movie, one deals with his managing of the business of making his cars. Now, one of the things that he firmly believes is that it's the business of making his cars and selling his cars that's going to pay for all of his expenses as a racer, that is, as the manager of a fleet of racers with a fleet of racing cars. That's extremely expensive at the highest levels of automobile racing. So he expects the car making and selling to pay for that, but he's not making many of those cars. They're practically custom made. Everyone has to be done simply to perfection. And so he can make just a very small number and sell just a very small number every year. So there's kind of a contradiction built in, and that's one of the things that he's wrestling with. And as I said, this movie has three main threads running through it. One is the racing, another is the business, and then a third is his personal life. And this provides a lot of the movie's most dramatic moments because he has a wife. And by the way, I haven't mentioned that Ferrari is played by Adam Driver and his wife is played by Penelope Cruz. And oh my gosh, they aren't exactly getting along these days. In fact, in one of the first scenes of the movie, she actually fires a pistol at him. So yeah, this is a conflicted relationship, shall we say. And he also has another little family because he has a mistress who lives outside the city and he has a son with her who is a secret from the world. And also I should mention that one of the tensions in his marriage to his own wife, the Penelope Cruz character, is that they had a son who died. And they are still mourning him, even though it's years later. They visit his grave and stuff like that. So his personal life is also complicated and is a very major strand running through the movie. The business, the racing, and the personal life with the two women in his life, the wife and the mistress. So how is the movie? Well, Michael Mann has never been one of my favorite filmmakers, but he certainly knows what he's doing. And technically, the movie is very, very well done. It's also very well acted. Adam Driver, I think, has been a bit overexposed these days. In his earlier career, I felt he was a very interesting actor. I used to enjoy seeing him on the TV series Girls. And then he got involved in movie making and he became a really, really, really top-level movie star, very handsome and masculine and all of that. And then I thought that it just became maybe a bit too much. Now, this movie is certainly not the sort of action-type hero that he's played in some of his movies. It's a very dramatic character. It's a character that requires requires a certain amount of introspection from him. It's not the first time he's done a character with an Italian accent, but I think he does a pretty good job of that. And yes, it's a good, solid, strong performance. I don't think it's loaded with charisma, but it has enough to keep his reputation intact and to keep the movie well-centered. Penelope Cruz is quite wonderful as the wife, although I think she's sort of an underwritten character. I should also mention Daniela Piperno, who plays the mistress, also very nicely done. And their young son is played by a little boy who does a very nice job. So it's a good movie. I don't think it's a great movie. I don't think it's a super exciting movie. If you're into cars, if you're into racing and that sort of thing, then, of course, it is a movie not to be missed. If, like me, you don't care all that much about those particular things, then you might be able to give it a miss and not be missing too terribly much. It's a good movie, to my mind, not a great movie, but some people will really love it, and it certainly does have some pretty exciting racing scenes in it, which maybe alone make the movie worth seeing, even if you're not interested in Enzo Ferrari's personal life. Last movie today, oh my gosh, talk about a dramatic topic. This is a movie called Society of the Snow, La Sociedad de la Nieve, and it is a movie that hails from Latin America. Its provenance is Spain and Chile and Uruguay, which is very heavily involved in the story of the movie, and also the United States. It has support and financing and so forth from all those countries. And it was directed and co-written by J.A. Bayona. And this is the same story, basically, that was told in the movie Alive back in 1993, a very good movie, which I really liked back in the early 90s. And this is what it's about, both Alive and the new movie, Society of the Snow, back in 1972. And this is real now. This is real stuff. A flight of Uruguay's Air Force, which had been chartered, and it was flying a rugby team to Chile from Uruguay to Chile, and it crashed. And where did it crash? It crashed in the heart of the Andes Mountains. Huge, gigantic, formidable mountains, as I think everybody knows, and as this movie very well demonstrates. So the crash was horrific. And there were something like 45 passengers on the plane, and not all of these people, but a lot of them were these young, athletic men. So, okay, 29 of them survived the crash. So 29 out of 45, again, most of them, not all of them, young, athletic men. Okay, so that's a fairly good number to survive a horrifying plane crash. And by the way, the plane crash takes place early in the movie, and it is very well done. It's very, very brief. And it really hits you hard. It has things like a row of seats collapsing one upon the other as everything slides forward. And oh my gosh, it's pretty awful to look at. But again, it's over pretty soon. And then we have what occupies practically the entire movie, which is the aftermath of the horrifying crash. So people are dying one after another. Not all of them all at once, because these are the people who survived the crash. They're the hardiest of that hardy passenger list. But yes, we do have people start to die, and that's pretty horrifying. And then when they realize where they are in the middle of no place, and that doesn't really mean no place, it means in the middle of this gigantic, huge mountain range with everything totally covered with snow, no thaw of any kind expected for a while yet, and everybody just completely trapped, how are they going to stay alive? And as one of the people says, you can live 3 minutes without air, you can live three weeks without food, but without water you can't live at all. Okay, so, maybe 3 months and then you're dead. So they can make all the water they want out of the snow, that is true, but food is going to be a real problem. And so one of the most notorious and infamous and famous things about this story, and it was told in the movie Alive way back in 1993, and it's told again in this movie, is that the characters, many of them, have to resort to cannibalism, to eating the bodies of the people who died in order to keep themselves alive. And the movie does a very sort of in-depth job of this. A lot of these people, and these are people from Uruguay, a lot of them are intensely religious, intensely Roman Catholic. They have real consciences. They really, really, really feel this is an evil, wrong thing to do. But on the other hand, if it's the only way to stay alive, maybe it is your duty to do this. So we have them wrestling with this philosophical and enormously practical question as the movie goes on. And well, I won't reveal what happens, but you can well imagine. And by the way, I think I probably would have done exactly what what most of them choose to do as the movie proceeds. So yeah, this is what is sometimes called nowadays an ordeal movie. It's about a bunch of people in this case, not one person, going through an ordeal. How are they going to get out of this? How are they going to survive? Okay, if they can find the tail of the plane, maybe they can get the batteries from the plane. Maybe they can get the radio going. But that's a long, long way away, a long, long trek. And yes, they eventually make that trek, and I won't reveal what happens there, but that's one of the sort of mini stories that takes place within the larger story of the overall situation. And then we have eventually the way that, yes, I will reveal this because it's very well known, but some of them do escape this horrifying ordeal alive. And it's just kind of interesting to see how that takes place and all the incredibly difficult decisions that are made along the way. So, Society of the Snow, I think it's a really good title, taken from a book about this same situation, because that's what they turn into. Obviously, the camaraderie turns out to be really important. They can't be squabbling too much among themselves. Probably there was more in real life than we see in the movie, but they do turn into a kind of a society or association, or you could even call it a very dark kind of club as they go through this horrifying ordeal. I found it an unimaginative movie. It tells all this in a very straightforward way, but a very vivid way, a very graphic way, a pretty dramatic way. And if you're interested in ordeal movies or adventure movies generally, or snow and mountains and ordeals, then this is a movie to see. Society of the Snow, one of the better movies of the new year. And that is my somewhat snowbound story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films and Focus, The Films, The Color Purple, Ferrari, and Society of the Snow.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.